Thank you, everybody. Thanks for having me today. It actually worked out pretty well because I did have a couple topics on Avraham that I had suggested, but but I guess I didn't realize that Rabbi Penner was covering Avraham, so it actually worked out pretty well because I'm gonna cover Sarah. he didn't do this by himself. I mean, I not only Sarah, but women in general. And, yes, behind every great man, there is a great woman. So just wanted to share some thoughts with you today about the women's role in the future of the Jewish people, and especially coming out of Parshas Lech Lecha, where we really have the emergence of the Jewish people. And Sarah takes a back step, a little bit backstage, but not really, kind of like the percussionist. We'll talk about that. And as Rabbi Penner said, she was in the box. Well, she got out of the box, and she certainly made her made, had her role in the future of the Jewish people. So we should have Mara Makomos. So let's talk about resilience, values, and committed action. And, Sarah, and certainly the role of women in Jewish destiny. I'd like to start here with a medrash. There are Mara Makomos in the back. A medrash from the Medrash Rabbah talks about in Parshas Vayeshev, talks about what different things that were going on during Mechiras Yosef. And the Medrash says everybody was busy during Mechiras Yosef. Shvatim hayu asukim b'mechirato shel Yosef. The Shvatim were busy selling Yosef. Yosef haya asuk besako v'tanito. Yosef was busy mourning the fact that he was sold, wearing sackcloths because he was mourning that he was being sold. Reuven haya asuk besako v'tanito. Reuven was busy mourning that Yosef was sold because he didn't want to do this. This wasn't his idea. Yaakov haya asuk besako v'tanito. Yaakov was busy mourning the fact that his son was being sold. So far, it makes sense, right? Everybody's, feeling bad about what happened, and the brothers are busy selling him. V'Yehuda, now it gets a little weird. Yehuda haya asuk likach lo isha. Yehuda was busy looking for a wife. V'HaKadosh Baruch Hu haya osek borei oro shel melech HaMashiach. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was busy choosing Mashiach, basically, creating the light of Mashiach. So like, what's going on here? Like the greatest, one of the greatest tragedies in Jewish history, the brothers are selling their brother. Everybody's busy either selling him or feeling bad about what happened. And Yehuda's like, shidduch dating? Okay, a word about shidduch dating. I feel like they didn't shidduch date. They actually met at the local well. In fact, once I was actually giving a Midrash Yom Rishon in the good old days, pre-COVID, when we actually did it in person at YU. It's very nice that we're doing it now like this. And I said this, I said something like, I don't know, I was talking about well scenes in Tanakh. And I said, I'm going, we talk about the shidduch crisis. I don't like that term, but we talk about it. I'm going to solve the shidduch crisis by building a well. I'm going to dig a well in my backyard. That's my plan. Everyone's going to meet. It's going to be amazing. And that's going to solve the problem. And one woman in the back raised her hand and she actually shouted out and she's like, it's not going to work. And I'm like, what do you mean it's not going to work? That's my big plan. And she said, well, it's not going to work because in this day and age, they're going to have men's hours and women's hours. They're going to have men's entrances and women's entrances. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, like Eliezer never would have met Rivka. So there you go. The well. So Yehuda's hanging out at the local well because he's looking for a wife, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is choosing Mashiach. So what's going on here? What's the connection here? So the Kutzke Rebbe, 18th century Hasidic master, has a beautiful explanation, not a historical fact, but a profound metaphor here. That what's going on here? So something terrible happened and everyone's feeling bad about it. Most of the people involved, except for the people involved in doing it, were feeling bad about it. And Yehuda was the one person who said, you know what? It's not enough to feel bad about it, but I'd like to do something and change something constructive. I have to make a difference and I have to start all over again. And I have to, really do real tshuva for what happened. And tshuva isn't just feeling bad about what happened in the past. It happened. I can't change that, but I can do something to change the future. So the best thing to do is to get married, right? Start the next stage in life. You get married, one person plus one person becomes one person. And we know that a marriage, the day of your marriage is like a Yom Kippur and you're starting afresh. And then also the Medrash continues and said, and the Kutzke Rebbe continues. He says, he'll start with the very first mitzvah, Puruvu. He's starting all over again because he's looking at the future. And then when HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw that Yehuda was the one person in this story who really understood that tshuva is not just about feeling, it's not just about feeling bad about what happened, but it's about now looking to the future and making a change. That's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, now I know when the world does tshuva, where Mashiach's going to come from. And where does Mashiach come from? From Shevet Yehuda. Because Yehuda understood that it's about the future, not just about the past. And it's when you think about it, obviously the past is so important. Our past is very important. But if it just is the past and it's not concretized in the present and acts as a bridge to the future, then what's the point? You know, I spoke to a group of TJJ students this summer in Israel. Baruch Hashem, I got in. My husband's Israeli. It was a little complicated. But, and you know, there, some of the kids got up. It was their last Shabbos there. And they're talking about, you know, look outside. We were in a Nativ. We were eating there Friday night. And they said, look outside. You see this 2,000-year-old wall. It's amazing. It's this 2,000-year-old wall. And then when I spoke after, I said, if you don't do anything about making a difference in your future and committing to this and being part of Klal Yisrael, then all it is a 2,000-year-old wall. Then it has nothing to do with the future of the Jewish people. Take the 2,000-year-old wall, be inspired by the 2,000-year-old wall, and make it a bridge to your future, and make a choice to really make a commitment to be part of the Jewish people. So it's a very, very important message. And again, even when the Rambam talks about his different levels of tshuva, the last level is Kabbalah Hatid. It's not just enough. It's accepting, making a change for the future, being in the same situation and acting differently. So it's not just enough to admit what you did or have charata or feel bad about it, but you have to make a change for the future. And if you look at the history of man from the very beginning, just like 2 weeks ago, we learned Parsha Breshi. So if you look at source number two, the very first, well, the second story of man sinning, first one we'll come back to it actually at the end, is the children, is the story of Cain and Hevel, the children of Adam and Chava. And you know the story, right? Adam, Cain and Hevel bring a korban. And Cain actually was first to bring the korban because it says Hevel Gamhu. He came after Cain. And what happens? Vel Cain vel minchato lo sha'a. It says Vayishah Hashem el Hevel vel minchato vel Cain vel minchato lo sha'a. That Hashem accepted in source number two. Hashem accepted Hevel's gift, and Cain's gift he didn't accept. And what happens? Vayichar leCain meod vayiplu panav. And Cain, it's an interesting pasuk here. Cain. It's two different emotions. Cain gets very angry. Vayichar l'Cain ma'od. There's anger. And vayiplu panav is more like sadness, like his face fell. So he's angry and he's also sad. And the Sefarno picks up on this. If you look at this Sefarno, it's an amazing Sefarno in source number three. He says, back to the pshat for a second. And Hashem responds, recognizing the two emotions. Hashem responds and says, Vayomar Hashem l'Cain, lama chara lecha v'lama naflu panecha? Why are you angry? And why are you so sad? Why are you depressed? Why did your face fall? Right? And if you look at the Sefarno, Lama Chara Lacha, in source number three, the Sefarno says, Lama Kaneta Be'achichas. First of all, you're so angry. Who is Cain angry at? So he's probably angry partly at Hashem for not accepting his karma, but it's easier to be angry at his brother than to be angry at God. So he's angry at his brother, right? He's upset. He's disappointed. His brother's korban was accepted. His wasn't. So what do we do with our anger? We externalize. I'm married to a psychologist, right? I know the lingo, right? We project, we externalize our anger, right? Instead of looking at himself and saying, well, maybe you didn't do it nicely. And in fact, the Mefarshim point out, you know, Cain gave, they gave me pri adama. He gave like from the fruits of the ground, like the bad stuff, Rashi says. You know, when you go apple picking, it's the stuff that's on the ground that's a little wormy. You don't pick that. You go for the ones on the tree. Whereas Hevel gave like a really nice gift, like the first of his livestock, and it was the fattest ones. So instead of looking at himself and saying, okay, maybe I did something wrong here, maybe I could do better, he externalized it. And he gets angry at his brother. And Hashem says, Lama kaneta be'achicha? You're so jealous of your brother. Why are you jealous of your brother? Kidoega shekibalti karbano baratzon? Are you upset that I accepted his karban, you know, happily? Hinei loy azeratzon pashut of shalo kedin. This wasn't unjust. This wasn't that I was showing favoritism here. Like, look at, like, you're going to be angry at someone, be angry at yourself. Like, look at your own actions. Don't externalize. He has nothing to do with this. And then furthermore, and if you're so upset and you're so depressed and you're going to get so angry at yourself, he says, and this is my favorite part of this, V'lama naflu panecha, says the Sefarno, ki kishayesh l'kilkul ezo takana. If you want to fix something, ein ra'oi leitz ta'er al mash avar. It's not good. It's not appropriate. It's not a good thing to just feel bad about what happened in the past. Aval ra'ui lishtadel lahasig tikun latid. Try to fix it. Try to fix it for the future. Try to make a difference for the future. Don't sit and wallow in self-pity. Yeah, you're disappointed. We're all disappointed. Things disappoint us. Stuff happens. But if you sit and you wallow in self-pity, so then nothing constructive happens. Pick yourself up and move on and learn from the mistakes. And that's the Rambam's point in Kabbalah al-Hati. That's where Tshuva comes from. That's what Yehuda's saying here. You know, I'm going to learn from, I'm going to move forward, I'm going to make a difference. And that's why what's fascinating here about the Kain and Hevel story, Hashem isn't even angry at Kain here. Like, this is a chinuch moment. This is like, okay, you brought a gift. It was very nice, but like, you know, make it a little mechubad. Like, it wasn't that. It wasn't respectable. It wasn't respectfully. Sometimes, you know, you want to give someone a gift who's important to you. You know, if you're going to give something that's not, you know, mechubad, like, it's better to not give the gift, you know? So he's telling him something very important. And then, by the way, he continues. I'm not going to, you know, continue going into Hashem's speech after that. But just to tell you the pshat, Hashem gives him this amazing, uplifting speech. You know, in case you're feeling bad, you know, and you're still feeling bad, even after I told you there's no reason to be upset and angry. He says, "Halo im tetiv se'et ve'im lo tetiv lapetach hatat roveitz ve'ilecha teshukato ve'atatim shalbo." Just to summarize it, that could be its own shir. But just to summarize it, Hashem says basically, like, if you learn from your actions and you pick yourself up and you move forward, you'll be lifted high, right? But if you don't, then your negativity, your reactions are going to pull you down. It's a very psychological idea over here. That look at the Malbim there. Another time, I'm not on time for that now, but really very psychological about, like, overcoming this negativity and your negative emotions. And it's like, you know, God's like the therapist here, and he's, you know, giving these amazing words, pearls of wisdom to Kayin. Like, you know, don't let yourself get stuck over this, because otherwise it's gonna end up, you know, following you to your grave. You're never gonna get rid of it. And pick yourself up and move on. And the best part of the speech, he says at the end, he says, "Ve'lecha teshukato," you have a desire towards it. Towards what? Towards getting sucked into the negativity. That's human nature. We get sucked into negativity. We get negative. We get pulled down. We feel bad. But what does Hashem say? But also the atatim shalvo, which is amazing. You also have the ability to overcome it. So your gut is your humanness. Your nature is to get sucked in and get angry and let it fester and let it stew and wallow in self-pity. But you can overcome it. This is bad talking to, you know, the children of Adam and Chava. Again, the tragedy of that story is that, you know, what comes next, obviously that he kills his brother, but that he totally didn't, you know, didn't listen to Hashem's amazing advice. Like, you go to the best therapist and you get amazing advice, but then you don't follow it. So it's a pretty sad story. But again, the point is, move forward, move, don't get stuck, don't wallow, move past this, and then you'll grow and you'll be lifted up by it. So I don't want to suggest, is that, just a disclaimer, this is not anti-men shir. This is just women are awesome shir. So let's just put it out there. So I want to suggest that there are women in Tanakh that really did this very well. Again, not to exclusion. It's like when you tell one of my kids, you know, "Wow, you're great. Like, I love you." And the other one's like, "What? I'm not great." No, it's just, you know, it doesn't mean we're excluding people. But I think that if you look through different stories in Tanakh, and for every story, I'm bringing four stories here that you're familiar with, or maybe a fifth, but there are so many other stories like this, where the women were the ones that were able to really understand this point and not get, you know, sucked into either the moment or the past, and be able to really look to the future and understand what needs to be done. And I think that does come from the fact that women were created with the word vayiven, very famous idea, that it wasn't just vayivra, like Hashem created, or vayitzer, but vayiven, that Hashem built. And of course, you know, famous idea, I mean, a lot of Mefarshim talk about how women were created with this bina, from the word vayiven, not just built, but with bina, a certain intuition, if you will, like an understanding, you know. And I just want to put out there also that there is an expression in English that we call female intuition. Now, I'm not saying males aren't intuitive, but, you know, there's no expression male intuition. I'm just saying that. But there is, like, this, you know, female intuition, like, you know, you just, you know, you sometimes, you know, you just, women, like, get it, you know, they'll see something and it's not necessarily black and white, but you just, like, you know, understand something beyond what's right in front of you. And if you look at some of these stories, so let's look at the first story here. And this is the one that's really a continuation to Rav Penner, or part of, you know, not even a continuation, but Rav Penner's beautiful, beautiful shir about Avraham. So it's interesting because as I was listening to him, I'm thinking, you know, it's true. Like, and this kind of put it, I learned a lot from the previous year, put into perspective a little bit. And maybe part of this was that Avraham, you know, didn't really realize what the mission was in terms of, you know, this child, raising this child, as opposed to the global mission of being Avraham Onkoyim. Because if you look at the story, with Avraham and Sarah and the birth of Yishmael. Now, first of all, before we look at Perek Chaf Aleph, which is really this is the birth of Yitzchak now, just a word about that, just a little background about that. Again, on the heels of what Rav Hender was saying, I just added this, you know, because I was thinking about it during this year. Even after Hashem tried to show Avraham what his mission was, I'm not sure he really understood that. I mean, yes, he understood that it was about a child, but because Hashem told him he's going to have a child. But I think, you know, when we continue on, and certainly at the end of yesterday's parsha, he doesn't really understand that child is Yitzchak. And he doesn't really understand, and it's not me saying this, you look at the pshat, he doesn't fully understand Sarah's role in all this. He knows he has to have this child. And in fact, Sarah understands it. I think Sarah has the intuition to really understand, because it's interesting. Hashem never says it explicitly. Sarah understands this. And that's why in Perek Tetzayin, in yesterday's Parsha, Sarah says, you know, listen, plan A was for me to have a child, but that doesn't look like it's happening because I'm getting up there in the years. And so maybe plan B is, maybe if I give you my servant, we have a concept like Shlucho Shel Adam Kemoto, a person's servant, if you send a shaliach, it's like yourself. So maybe she says, ulai ibaneh mimena. Maybe I will build through her. That's her lashon. It was her idea to give Hagar to Avram. And her reason was, maybe I can build from her. Meaning, I know I have to have this child with Avraham, right? I know what my mission is. And I know that it's about this child. And I know that it has to be mine. So maybe, trying to be creative, didn't really work so well, but if I'm, you know, maybe if she's my servant, so ulai ibaneh mimena, I could build through her. And that was Sarah's plan in Perek Tetzayin. Again, it didn't, a lot of complications to that story, but we're not going into that. It's another whole shir. But then what happens in the next parak, in Perek Yitzayin, and again, I'm kind of adding this because I was thinking about it during Rabbi Fender's shir. Don't worry, we'll still finish in time. So at the end of Perek Yitzayin, when Hashem says to Avraham, he changes Avraham's name, and then Sarah's name is automatically changed because Avraham's name changed. That's also interesting if you look at the Lashon. And then, which by the way, it's important to note, when he says to Avraham, from now on, your name is going to be Avraham. You are going to be called Avraham because I'm changing your name to Avraham. With Sarah, he says to Avram, and Sarah is not going to be called Sarah anymore. Kisara Shema. What do you mean Kisara Shema? Because Sarah is her name. It was never changed. But the point was, you're partners with Sarah. And the Torah Mora actually says this. As soon as your name gets changed to Avraham, her name's automatically changed because she's your partner in this. I'm not sure Avram fully understood that. And you see it from the pshat, because at the end of Yud-Zayin, when you know, after he changes the name, and then Hashem says, listen, Avram, you're going to have a child. Guess what? I have news for you. Why haven't waited until this week's parsha for Sarah to know? I don't know, but maybe it's not so far off. But I have, you know, waiting for so many years to have a child. And he says, listen, Avram, I have news for you. You're going to have a child. You and Sarah are going to have you're going to have a child. And Avram's reaction's first reaction before his inner reaction, which he laughs, you know, and he says, I'm so old. But what's his first verbal reaction? He says, what do you mean? Luish Malichel Fanecha? I have a child. Like, is Yishmael going to live? Like, what do you mean, big news? I have a child, right? I have Yishmael. And if you look at the end of Yud-Zayin, what does Hashem say? It's so interesting. Right after Avraham, and this is all pshat. I'm not even bringing them up for Hashem. Right after, I think I jotted down the pasuk. Right after Avraham says that. Right after Avraham says Lo Yishmael Yechiyeh Lefanecha, he says Hashem responds by saying, at the end of Yud-Zayin, he says, Aval Sarah ishtacha yoledet lacha ben. First of all, the word aval, what is aval? But when do you use the word aval? When you're saying something different than what the person before you said. Yes, I hear what you're saying, but. So that's what Hashem is saying to him. Aval Sarah ishtacha yoledet lacha ben. yes, Avram, you have a child. So maybe, you know, you understand at this point, like Rabbi Penashir, that your mission here is to have a child, that it's not necessarily the global issue, but it's raising that kid, you know, that from kid, the kid who's going to be connected to Hashem, right? To be committed. But he doesn't fully get yet that it has to be Sarah's child, which is fascinating. He says, "Aval Sarah shechaya leded lecha ben v'karat et shmo Yitzchak." Right, Sarah, your wife is going to have a child, and I'm going to you're going to name him Yitzchak. That kimoti et briti toliv brit olam ulizara charav, and I'm going to make a brit with him and his children afterwards. Uli Shmuel shmaticha, he says, and Yishmael, listen, I get it. He's your son. Hine beirachti oto veifreiti oto veirbeiti oto bimod meod v'natativ legoy gadol. He's going to have a great nation also. Like, but that's not your mission. Ve'et briti akim et Yitzchak, but the brit that I'm making with you, I'm making with Yitzchak, asher teled lachasara, right? That Sarah is giving birth to lemoed hazebeshana hasaret this time next year. So it's just interesting. Again, a little more background that I was going to give, but it's very interesting that Hashem is, you know, again, listening to Rabbi Penner. So he got that he needed to have a child, but now he has to get that this child is with Sarah. That it's not the child he has already, because Sarah is his partner in this Masorah, in this mission. It's not just about Avraham. It's not just about the Tati. It's about the mommy also, right? That should be my title next. Anyway, so back to the pshat that I want to focus on now. So look what happens. So what happens? So yes, so he gets that, and Sarah has this child, you know, that Hashem had told him about. And Avram ben Meah shana beveled lo at Yitzchak, we see in Breishit Chaf Aleph, and then we have an issue. What's going on here? But Tomer Sarah, oh, well, first of all, a little more background to Yitzchak for a second. But Tomer Sarah, tchok asali Elokim kol ha-shamei Yitzchak li. Right? Sarah says when Yitzchak is born, this interesting phrase, you know, God has made laughter from me. Tchok asali Elokim kol ha-shamei Yitzchak li. Everybody is going to laugh at me. Again, it's not at, it's with. What does she mean by the tzchok? A little background about Yitzchak and his name, you know, because we know that Avram's reaction was that he laughed and, you know, he's like, you know, I'm so old and Sarah's so old. You know, the famous Rashi, well, he said Sarah's so old, and the famous Rashi that Hashem told Sarah that Avram left and said he was so old for Shalom Bayit. Great Rashi, you know, no reason to tell, you know, who's calling who old, you know? But anyway, so he has, so Sarah, you know, they have this child at a very old age, and the Torah tells us that Sarah was clearly past the time, that she was derech nashim, postmenopausal, has this, you know, miracle child, and they name him Yitzchak, and Hashem had told him to name him Yitzchak. So, like, why is his name Yitzchak? If laughter was a negative thing, if it's not so good that they laughed because they, you know, were a little bit in disbelief, so why is his name Yitzchak? And the idea, the Mefarshim talk about Yitzchak's name, and the Mefarshim say, Ramban talks about this among others, that there are two types of laughter. It says two types of tzchok. One is a mocking, laughing at, haha, you know, laughing at someone. And the other one is laughing because of something amazing. It's like more than a smile. Like, Azim alei Hashem tzchok pinu. When we ask Hashem to fill our mouths with laughter, when you're privy to tremendous bracha or a nes or something miraculous, you know, it's like, it's so amazing that it just brings laughter to your face, you know, and that's why we ask Hashem to fill our mouths with laughter, which is tremendous bracha and miracles and et cetera. So the tzchok of Yitzchak was that second type of laughter. And why was that? Why would that bring laughter? Sarah's having a child, because here's this postmenopausal woman who's nursing a newborn child. Right? If you think about it, the birth of Yitzchak was Yitzchak himself was a living, breathing proof of the existence of God. You had this old couple walking around, you know, talking about, you know, God, this new concept of God. And now this old couple miraculously have a miracle child. That is proof that God exists. That's proof that everything they've been saying is true. And that's why that's what Sarah means. Chok asali Elokim, kol hashamei Yitzchakli. Everyone who hears about this is going to recognize the miracle in all this. And that's why Yitzchak's whole essence is proof of the existence of God. Fascinating. So by the way, remind me to tell you something afterwards. I don't want to say this being recorded. Anyway, so what happens afterwards? So what happens? Vayigdal hayelen pasachet vayigamav vayasav amishteh, etc. He was weaned, and they made a party, and Of course, he has a bris milah at the end of Yud Zayin in yesterday's parsha. Everyone has a bris milah, including Yishmael, in the context of the whole, you know, household of Avraham. But then Yitzchak, you know, it's a standalone party. It's like a big deal. And then what happens? And then afterwards, you know, he was weaned, and the bris came right before this. And then what happens? Starting from pasuk tet, but teres Sarah et ben Hagar haMitzrit asher yalda laAvraham mitzache, right? That Sarah sees something, and she sees the son of Hagar the Mitzrit. And notice the focus here. Hagar the Mitzrit, her child is not going to be the future of the Mesorah. It's Sarah's child, because Hagar is Hagar HaMitzrit. And I think there's a connection between what Rabbi Penner was talking about, the Mitzrim also not buying in, right? Asher Yaldala Avraham Mitzachek. And she sees this child is laughing. And of course, that laughing comes up again. And all the Mefarshim here say, this is the first type of laughter. This is mocking. This is laughing at Yitzchak. And what happens? And Sarah sees this, and Sarah sees not just what's right in front of her, but sees something much bigger. And what does Sarah see? So yes, on one level, the older brother is, you know, making fun of the younger brother. But Sarah sees, which is normal, right? But Sarah sees something much, much more threatening. And Sarah sees beyond what's right in front of her. Think about it for a second. If Yishmael is making fun of Yitzchak and you know, calling him a freak, like, you freak, look, you have such old parents, you know, look at your mom, look at my mom, you know, what, you're a freak. And if Yishmael, the older brother, would make Yitzchak embarrassed about where he came from, what happens to the future of the Jewish people? Back to Rabbi Penner, his whole mission, and Sarah understood that, was that this child had to grow up connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and committed to this, committed to the ideology that Avram started. And what happens if Yitzchak is embarrassed of his old parents? I'll tell you what happens. Look at American Jewry, right? Look at the generation that was embarrassed of their parents and their grandparents because they had a funny accent, because they spoke different, because their food was different, because their dress was different. How many people left the fold because they were embarrassed? Because they're embarrassed of their parents and grandparents, and they wanted to be modernized, and they wanted to, you know, not feel embarrassed about it. So what would happen if Yitzchak was embarrassed about where he came from, and he decided, I want my own life. I don't want to follow in, you know, my old parents' old-fashioned ways. And that's what Sarah saw. And Sarah sees this, again, this intuition, this female intuition, this ability to see, like, the bigger picture, not just right in front of her. And she says to her husband, she says to Avram, "Batomer l'Avram, garesh hamazot ve'et bina, ki lo yirash ben hamazot im b'niyim Yitzchak." There's something at stake here. There's something big at stake here, that maybe it's not right in front of us, but I see it. I see the bigger picture. And now Avram doesn't see that, because if you look at Yud Aleph, Vayirah Davar Me'od Beinei Avram Alodot Bno. And again, you can understand this is Avram's son, so he didn't want to, you know, and kick Yishmael out of his house. And by the way, it was Avraham and Sarah that always brought people into their homes. They don't kick people out. And if you want to say that it's sour grapes because Sarah was upset at Hagar from this past week's parsha, it's not, because Hashem agrees with Sarah. But Avram, for whatever reasons, whether it was emotional, personal, you know, didn't have that, you know, bina yitera of the woman, didn't see that bigger picture here, for whatever reasons that stood in the way. And he didn't want to do it. It was bad to him, this idea, because, you know, aladot beno, because of his son. And what does Hashem say? And believe me, if it was sour grapes from Perek Tet Zayin in yesterday's parsha, Hashem wouldn't have agreed with Sarah here. But Yomar Elokim al Avram, al yira beinecha al hanar v'al matecha. Don't be upset about this, about what you need to do. Kol asher tomar elecha Sarah shma bekola, ki biyitzchak yikare lecha zera. Everything that Sarah is saying, listen to her. It's a great line. Any wife out there, if your name Sarah, works perfectly. Like, you can use it even if your name's not Sarah. Listen to your wife. She knows what she's talking about, right? Everything she's saying, she's right. So it's also, again, Sarah saw this, had this vision, had this broader vision here. I spent a lot of time on Sarah because coming after a great shiur about Avram. But I'm not going to spend as much time on Rivka. But if you look, Rivka did a very similar thing. If you look at the next source, there's only a piece of the next source. I should have brought this is the end of Perek Chavav, but the beginning of Chaf Zayin is really where the story happens. You have your Chumashim if you want to look at the beginning of Chaf Zayin, Parshas Toldos. But at the end of Chavav, so Rivka does a similar thing, where Rivka sees the bigger picture. and you know, doesn't sees beyond what's right in front of her, when maybe Yitzchak didn't really see that. And if you look, so what's the story? Again, a little bit of background. Well, first of all, the end of Chavav, we know Vatiena Morat Ruach Li Yitzchak LeRivka. Vahi Esav and Arba'im Shana. Esav took these wives, and it didn't sit well with Yitzchak and Rivka. They were not, you know, impressed, let's say, with the wives that Esav took. So I wanted to throw that in there, because right off the bat, like, you know, if you're married to the wrong women, so then that's going to be a problem, you know, bigger picture. It's not just, you know, there's a bigger ramifications for the future. So I think that it's interesting that that was, you know, the thing that really, you know, once he married the wrong women, like, forget it, you know, that then his future, he doesn't have, you know, such a such an impressive future then, let's say. But I think that the story of Rivka, again, a little bit of background here, because everyone knows about the story of the bracha that Yitzchak was going to give a bracha to Esav, and then Rivka, you know, told Yaakov to trick his father. And again, that's the beginning of Perek Chav Zayin, where, and also that, you know, what does it mean that his eyes were weak from seeing? Maybe he couldn't see some, maybe his eyes were literally weak, as you see a lot of Mefarshim saying, or he couldn't see something. And maybe what he couldn't see was the bigger picture here. And he tells, you know, Yosef is going to give him a bracha. And then, and the Lashon is interesting, because Rivka basically tells Yaakov, you listen to everything that I'm saying to you. Listen carefully. She says to him, she says, "V'ata b'nishma l'asher ani mitzaveh otach." Similar to the Lashon that Hashem says to Avram about Sarah, listen to what she's saying. She knows what she's talking about. Rivka tells Yaakov to trick his father and take the place of Esav with the same Lashon. Listen to what I'm saying. Follow everything I'm saying. Okay, this is from Rivka, not God. But you have to do exactly what I'm saying, because there's something very important at stake here. And that's why she tells him to, you know, take the bracha. Now, again, just a word about the bracha. There's a misconception that you know, what bracha was this? What, you know, Rivka told Yaakov to take the bracha instead of Esav. So what, Yaakov, Yitzchak was going to give Esav the bracha of the Jewish people? The bracha of the Jewish people is the bracha we saw in yesterday's parsha, that you're going to be a source of blessing to the world. You're going to be this, you know, or lagoyim. So if Rivka hadn't told Yaakov to trick his father, so Esav would have been given the bracha of a nivrachu bacha? And also, was that in Yitzchak's authority to give? And the answer is a resounding no. And what bracha did he want to give Esav? He wanted to give Esav a bracha of physicality. Look at the bracha he gave Yaakov, thinking he was Esav, right? It's vayitena lokim mital hashamayim umishmanei haaretz. It was, you know, the fat of the land and the dew of the heavens. It was a physical bracha. You should be physically successful. And there's some beautiful mefarshim there, by the way, also, that he knew who Esav was. Beautiful parenting advice from Rambam talks about this. He says, you know, maybe he just wanted to build him up. Like, he knew he was like going off the derech a little. Instead of bashing him, I'll give you bracha, you know? Beautiful stuff, really beautiful stuff. But the point is, he wasn't giving him the bracha of the Jewish people. It wasn't a spiritual bracha, right? Because that bracha is not Yitzchak's to give. That's Hashem's to give. Hashem gives it to Abraham, he gives it to Yitzchak, and he gives it to Yaakov. So he was giving a bracha of physicality. Why? Because think from Yitzchak's perspective, I have two children, they're twins. Unlike my brother, we all come from the same, they both come from the same mother. So why would Yitzchak think that one would be chosen to be part of the Jewish people and the other wouldn't? Probably they both come from Rivka. So if they both come from Rivka, they're both going to be, you know, fathers of the Jewish people, leaders of the Jewish people. So Esav is the strong one. Yaakov's Yishtam. I'll give Esav the bracha of the physicality. He'll be physically strong, and Yaakov will be spiritually strong. And they'll work together like a, you know, Yisachar Zvulun match, pair, right? Partnership. So that was maybe Yitzchak's plan, maybe. But Rivka heard this, and Rivka was privy to a piece of information that Yitzchak wasn't. And why she didn't communicate that, again, it's another whole topic. But when the twins were fighting in utero, if you remember, Rivka went, Lidroshet Hashem. She went to ask, what is going on here? And the response was, Hashem told her, Shnei goyim bebitznech. Right? You have two different nations, right? And they're already fighting. So this is the problem. You have two different nations. And Rivka knew that. Again, why there was definitely breakdown of communication somewhere in there. But the point is that when she now heard that Yitzchak is going to give this physical bracha to Esav, she panicked. And she said, this has big ramifications for the future. If Esau's a strong one, that what happened? And they're going to be fighting against each other. What happens to Yaakov? Then what happens to the future of the Jewish people? Again, a broader, more threatening, you know, a broader threat, if you will. And that's why she tells Yaakov, this is what you have to do. And the same Lashon, listen to everything I'm saying. Listen carefully to what I'm saying. Do exactly what I say, because there's a bigger issue at stake here. If you look on, continue on, we have a similar thing with another woman who is highlighted at the beginning of Shmot. And we're talking about Miriam now. Moshe's sister Miriam. We know from the beginning of Shmot, Vayelach ish mibeit Levi, Vayikach et bat Levi. Right? A man from the Perek Aleph in Shmot is all about the Jews who came down to Mitzrayim and how they multiplied and then they were enslaved and the beginning of Shibud Mitzrayim. And then the Geula really begins at the beginning of Perek Bet with the birth of Moshe. And what are we told? Vayelach ish mibeit Levi, Vayikach et bat Levi. A man from the house of Levi marries a woman from the house of Levi. So interesting, right? We know that it's Amar Man Yocheved later on. That's fascinating. Another time, but you know, you have all these people at the beginning of Shmot that don't have names, and the book is called the Book of Shmot, right? Think about it, right? A man from the house of Levi marries a woman from the house of Levi. Who find Moshe is not even called Moshe. Why is he called Moshe? Because another nameless person, Bat Paro, calls him, whatever. Another. If you want to talk about it afterwards, we can talk about it afterwards. Fascinating. Anyway, this man from the house of Levi marries a woman from the house of Levi, and they have this child, right? So, and that's the beginning of the Gula. So if you look at Rashi, Rashi asks a very famous question there. Right? What do you mean a man from the house of Levi marries a woman from the house of Levi? Like all of a sudden, Amram and Yocheved got married. Moshe is the youngest of three children. So obviously they were married. So this is famous Rashi. Rashi says, Parush hayamimena. Yes, the reason they were married, but then they had to get divorced. They were divorced. Why? Mipnei gzeirat paro. Because of the decree of Paro. Because if you remember, Paro made a decree that if there were baby boys born, they would have to be thrown into the Nilus. So they would have to be killed. So all the Jewish couples separated. They divorced because we don't need to bring babies into this, you know, horrible existence. So what happens? Chazar v'lakha. So he remarried her. So this happened between Aaron and Moshe. So after, you know, they were divorced after Aaron and then remarried, and that was the birth of Moshe. So Chazar v'lakha, v'zeu v'yelach. So why does it say v'yelach ish mibeit Levi? Just say v'yikach ish mibeit Levi at bat Levi. Like why v'yelach? Says Rashi, shalach be'atzat bito. He followed Amram, the father followed the advice of his daughter, Miriam, that little Miriam said to him, Shamralo, she wasn't so little time, but gzerat, well, she was actually, Shamralo gzeratcha kashem mishal paro. Your gzera is worse than Paro's. Ki Paro gazara lascharim v'atagamke in ala nekevot. Because Paro is destroying the men, but you're destroying the women. Meaning this is worse. If you all separate and you don't bring more kids into the world, then that's a problem for the future of the Jewish people. There's a much broader threat that Miriam sees. That Miriam in this story has this Bina Yetera, this female intuition, and says, wait a second, you know, there are broader ramifications right now, looking at the picture in front of us. Yes, you don't want to have children, but what happens? There's ramifications. There's a broader picture here. And if you see following along, it wasn't just Miriam, but all the women in Mitzrayim had this intuition. All the women in Mitzrayim understood this. And we know from the Gemara and Sota that the idea that Vizchar Nashim Tzidkaniyot Shayu Be'al Toh Ador Nikalu Yisrael Mitzrayim. We know that we're taught that it was in the zchut, in the merit of the women of Mitzrayim that Bnei Yisrael were able to be redeemed. What does that mean? What did the women do that it was in their zchut, they were able to be redeemed? And we see this, I mean, there in the Gemara and Sota, it goes into a whole explanation, but I want to show you through the words of Rashi, which is, you know, reflects and talks about that Gemara and Sota. But if you look at in Shmot, when we talk about the building of the Mishkan and the Kelim of the Mishkan, so the idea that the kior, the wash basin in the Mishkan, was made out of the mirrors, the copper of the mirrors of the women in Mitzrayim, right? Vayaset ha-kior nechoshet betkano nechoshet b'marot ha-tzovot asher tzavu petach ha-omeid. That the kior was made from these bronze mirrors, the copper mirrors of the women in Mitzrayim. So if you look at the Rashi there, and again, Rashi is reflecting Gemara and Sota, which is talking about why the women, it was in their zchut that we left Mitzrayim. Rashi explains the following scene, and it's pretty incredible. Again, the Gemara and Sota has the same scene. The marot atzovot. What do you mean marot atzovot? What's marot atzovot? What does that mean? He says, Benot Yisrael, it was the mirrors of the armies. Sava, army. What does that mean? Benot Yisrael, says Rashi, hayu biyadan marot. They had these mirrors. Shara'ot vahem kishahem mitkashtot. They would use these mirrors to look in these mirrors when they would, you know, decorate themselves, put on makeup, you know, like if you go to the ancient Egypt exhibit in the Metropolitan Museum of Art, you see like all these, you know, yeah, they have all these makeup containers, and women always had their makeup, you know, they had these dyes and everything, but and they had these mirrors. And I was so excited when I brought my kids once there. You know, I thought it was a great Chol HaMoed Pesach activity. Go to the ancient Egypt exhibit. It really is, by the way. You know, and when you learn this stuff and then you see there was an exhibit with like, it was an ancient mirror. You know, the kids, I got all so excited. Like, oh, you see, it's the mirrors of the women in Mitzrayim, right? So what is it? So the af otan lo ikvu mi lehavil in the divata mishkan. Look at the language here. The af otan lo ikvu. Even these, they did not bring, it didn't prevent them from bringing to the Mishkan. When Moshe was asking for donations for the Mishkan, the women brought these mirrors. And look what Rashi says. Look at Moshe's reaction. Moshe was disgusted. That's a very strong word, mo'es. He was disgusted. He was repulsed. It's like, I don't want these mirrors. Why? It's Sahara. What do we need mirrors? Mirrors represent vanity, sheker achen behevel yofi, or even worse, you know, yetzer hara, like you get pulled into, you know, always looking at your, you know, looking to see how you look. That's why when you're in a avelus, God forbid, if you're in a avelus, you know, mirrors are covered. Like you're not supposed to be focused on mirrors. Moshe, what does he need these mirrors for? He's building, you know, very, very holy vessels in the Mishkan. So he doesn't want to take these. He was disgusted by it. Amar lo kadosh baruch hu kabel. And Hashem says to him, you take these mirrors, ki elu chavivim alai minakol, because these mirrors are more precious to me than everything else. Why? Because she'al yedeihem hamidu anashim tzva'ot rabot b'mitzrayim. Because it's these mirrors, this is how the women built armies of kids in Mitzrayim. And then he goes through this scene that the Gemara in Sota explains, also describes what happened. The men were broken. They were broken by the hard work, by the avodah perach. And they were just broken physically, emotionally, psychologically. And what would these women do? These women would go, they would go to meet them in the fields after this horrible, backbreaking day of work, many, many hours of work, and they would bring them food. And they would feed them. You know, I read this Rashi, I'm like, even they knew that a way to a man's heart is through a stomach, right? Everyone's thinking that. But Rashi's describing that, right? And they went and they made all these delicacies and they brought this food. And they took these mirrors. The kolachat ro'a atzma im ba'ala b'mar'eh u'misadlim b'davar. I love this. Each one would take the mirror and they would look in the mirror with their husbands, you know, hold the mirror up. I'm telling you, it's the first selfie. Rashi is describing in the 11th century, the first selfie, right? We're holding the mirror up and we're looking at ourselves. And they would say things, they would like flirt with them. Like flirt, it's really like a flirtatious, you know, like seduction almost. Lomar, I'm prettier than you. Look at us, aren't we a cute couple? You know, there's something about that. You see yourselves as a couple, like we don't see ourselves, you know, other people see us. You can't see yourself unless you look in the mirror. And sometimes there's something nice, like, you know, you see, you know, you and your spouse, and you're like, oh, we're such a cute couple, you know? And there's something like, you know, flirtatious about that. There's something nice about that. And that's what, you know, and they're like flirting with their husbands. And then their husbands would desire them, you know, these husbands who are broken by this avodat perech, and they would get, you know, their husbands turned on to them. And then they would bring them, they would go home together and they would be together and they would get pregnant and have children. It's a great scene that Rashi describes. Again, look at the Gemara and Sota describes the same thing, but that's what they did with these mirrors. And that's because they had a broader vision. Meaning, do you think that these women felt like bringing children into this miserable existence? Do you think they were up to it physically and emotionally and psychologically? Probably not. But they saw beyond it. They saw the broader vision beyond it, that what happens if we don't do this? What happens to the Jewish people? What then Cairo wins. So this, we have to do this. This is something we have to do because we see broader than what's right in front of us. If you look at the Me'as Shiluach in number 11, the Ishbitzer has a sefer Me'as Shiluach. There's something very beautiful in the sefer that I feel like really pulls this together and talks about, you know, the kior and a broader theme of this. talks about washing, a word about the kior. The kior was the wash basin. I'm saying wash basin because we're talking about the Mishkan or the Beit HaMikdash. It was a sink. Just, you look like wash basin, sounds a little fancier. You know, it was the sink that when you walk in, why was it so important? Because before the Kohen could do any of the avoda, he had to wash his hands. I mean, the old Masechet Yoma is about how to wash, you know, right foot, right leg at the same time, right hands, you know, left foot, left hand at the same time. There was a way to wash, but you couldn't do any of the avoda without washing in the kior. So the Ishbitzer in Me'ash Shiloch talks about rechitza, like washing. It's interesting because, like, you know, washing is a big part of the avoda. It's also a big part of our routine. You know, we have, you know, some say that OCD is higher in the front community. It's not, though. My husband has data to prove otherwise. But the point is, you know, sometimes because we're like washing is a big thing, right? So he says that ki rechitzam, all right. Well, actually, let's start from the Agama Kohen. The Kohen who's doing avoda has to wash. Now this is fascinating. Says the Ishbitzer, why does the Kohen have to wash? It's not like his hands are dirty. It's not like you wash when you go to the bathroom, you know? He has to wash because it's symbolic of him washing away his own negias, if you will. Like, he's not doing this because he's so special and he gets a Kohen and he gets to go do a lot of savoda, but he's washing away his own ego, his own stuff, his own arrogance, if you will. And what he's saying, symbolically, when he washes his hands, he's saying, it's not about my ratzon, it's about Hashem's ratzon. I'm washing away my own stuff because I'm doing avodas Hashem. He's only doing what Hashem wants. It's not about me. It's about Hashem. And then he continues this Ishbitzer, and he says, "V'chein asher nisavinu litol yadenu shacharit v'kodem seuda." Why do we wash our hands in the morning before we start our day, before shacharit, and also before a meal? Who gam kein kodem shiatchil hadam laasok b'tzarchei haguf? Before a person starts his physical day or her physical day, before they start taking care of the necessities of the of their physical bodies, tzarich tfila laHashem itbarach. They need a tfila. To Hashem, basically, this is what the washing is symbolic. I'm telling you, when I saw this, when I wash in the morning, it's totally different meaning. You know, you think about it. It's not just, you know, you're washing. What you're washing, what you're doing is you're symbolic is saying that my life is not just about me. That I don't just do what I want to do. I also want to be an Obed Hashem. I also want to do what Hashem, I want. It's, you know, you can do things that make you happy and enjoy also, but it's not just about that. And sometimes those two come in conflict. You know, thank God in Judaism, we don't have to get rid of the physical in order to connect Hashem. It's the physical and the spiritual together. It's the elevation of the physical into something spiritual, right? That's what it is. It's transcending the physical and making it spiritual. But there are times that it comes into conflict that we want something physically, but maybe spiritually it's not good for us. And then if we think that our lives are not just about our ratzon, but ratzon Hashem and doing what Hashem wants, so that helps us, you know, make better decisions and make better choices. And sometimes we choose the ratzon, my ratzon and the physical, and sometimes we choose ratzon Hashem and we're works in progress and we're human beings. But that's what the tefillah is. When you're washing your hands in the morning, think about it. What you're saying is, my life, thank you Hashem, moda'ani, that you woke me up. Thank you for giving me another day. And then you wash. And what you're saying is, my life is not just about me and my needs. There's a higher authority. And by the way, and he says, before you eat a meal also, same thing. You know, think about when you sit down for a Shabbos meal Friday night, especially, you know, we're losing the short Shabbatot now, you know, the longer Shabbatot, and you're, I don't know, like, there's never anything to eat on Fridays, you know, not quite as bad as Erev Pesach, but, you know, like, you don't, you know, you sit down, you're hungry, like, you really haven't had, like, real meals during those days sometimes, and you sit down, and why are we washing? We're washing because we're about to sit down and enjoy a nicer meal than we've had all week, but it's not just about me. So by washing, what we're saying, we're doing this to be Mekadesh the Shabbos also. Of course, we can enjoy it. We have Oneg Shabbos. But when you're washing, you're saying we're elevating this physical act of eating and we're elevating it and we're washing away just our own ratzon. We're doing this to be Mekadesh Shabbos because that's ratzon Hashem. And that's what washing is. So if you think about it, how amazing is it that this kior was made out of the women's mirrors, the mirrors of the women in Mitzrayim? That's exactly what the women did. The women washed away their own stuff. The women put it was an act of selflessness. Like I said, do you think that they felt physically, emotionally up to bringing kids into this miserable existence of Sheba Mitzrayim? But yet they did it because it was, that's what they needed to do for the future of the Jewish people. And that's why it's so appropriate that these mirrors that they used in this act of selflessness were the mirrors that were used for the kiyor, for the wash basin, for the sink of the, where the Kohanim had to wash away their nikias and their own, you know, ratzon as they were doing the avodah for Hashem. Last point. I'll skip to number 14 and 15. So this, the whole concept of, you know, again, like I said, for every story that I brought, there's other many stories where the women understood this. You know, they had the bigger picture. And it's very interesting because when I was thinking about these ideas, it made me realize something. Actually, I'll tell you how I realized something. There was something that I never understood. I mean, there's a lot of things I don't understand. I taught Breishit a lot of times, one of my favorite parshiot in the whole Torah. And I never understood one of the things I never understood was throughout the story of the sin of Adam and Chava, from the emergence of Adam and Chava, the Adam is called Adam and Chava is called Haisha, right? Adam is man and Chava is the woman. And Chava is not called Chava until the very end of the story, right? The very end of the story, after they sin, it's the end of Perek Gimel, after they sin, after they're kicked out of Gan Eden, after they're punished, that's when it says, Vayikra Adam Shem Ishto Chava, Ki Hayta Im Kol Chai. Adam called his wife Chava because she's the mother of all living things. Seriously? He should have called her Chava a long time ago. I mean, it wasn't that long. It was the first day of creation, according to most. But the point is, when Hashem first created Chava, you know, Hashem creates Adam, takes a step back, kiviyachol. He says, "Lo tov hayod Adam levado, eselo ezer kenegdo." You know, Adam had gone around and named all the animals already. You know, he'd gotten to know the animals, and then, but uladam lo matza ezer, but he couldn't find anyone that was good for him. And that's when Hashem says, you know, it's not good for man to be alone. Eselo ezer kenegdo. And then he puts Adam to sleep and he creates Chava and he brings Chava to Adam. And Adam gets so excited. He says, Zot hapam etzem eyatzamai. This time, this is a woman for me. This is the woman for me. Wouldn't it have been appropriate at that point, he just finished naming all the animals, that he would say like, okay, I'm going to call her Chava because she's the mother of all living things. Why at the end of the whole story? Why at the end of the sins? Why at the end of the punishments? And I'm telling you, I looked at a lot of Mefarshim, as many as I could look at. Nobody talks about it, right? Nobody even comments. I mean, there's some comments on Chava, but it doesn't have to do with this idea. And I was really stumped. Like, I'm trying to come up with an idea. And I saw something in the Sforno. The Sforno says five words. Sforno says, Chava, shetzricha lechiot ulegadel habanim becheta. He calls her Chava, not talking about when, but I think it's connected, because she has to live and raise her children in her sin. She has to live and raise her children in her sin. So that's why he called her Chava after the sin, because she has to live and raise her children in her sin. Now, I didn't know what that meant. I was like playing it in my head. Like, what does he mean in her sin? Obviously, Bechata is an important part of it because she was named Chava afterwards. But what do you mean she has to live and raise her children in her sin? And I'll tell you what made me think of it. My husband runs a mental health clinic in Muncie, and he was, Shani works with him. Probably a bunch of other people here work with him as well. And you've been there from the very beginning. He was giving a parenting class. And he was talking about depression and anxiety and how to notice signs of depression and anxiety in your kids. And he puts, he likes to bring in Mar Makomos. He likes to bring in the Jewish perspectives very often, you know, when he talks, you know, this very connection, it's not bifurcated, it's Oren psychology, you know, it's very synthesized. So he likes to bring that in. And he was talking about signs of depression, and he puts, you know, on the screen, on the slide, according to the DSM 4 or 5, what do we have to 5? Okay. Well, maybe at that time it was 4. I don't know. They come out every couple of years, right? They want you to buy the new book, but anyway, so he put up on the screen, the different symptoms, you know, the symptoms of depression, like what you could look at, you know, the signs of depression. And then what he did was he split the screen and he put on the other side of the screen. It was a Gemara in Erevin that described Adam post-sin, right? Adam was kicked out of Gan Eden. And the Gemara says that Adam basically, he was kicked out of Gan Eden and just basically collapsed right outside the gate of Gan Eden, the gates of Gan Eden. And whatever, I'm not going to go into the whole description of the Gemara. It's Gemara in Erevin, Daf Yud Chedam of Beit, I think. And he, and And, you know, he put his head between his legs and he just couldn't move and he couldn't eat and he couldn't sleep. And, you know, and if you looked at the symptoms, it's fascinating. You look at the symptoms of Adam post sin and you look at the symptoms of the DSM-5 of depression, and it's so similar. There was a sexual piece in there also. And there was so, the similarities were unbelievable. And I'm looking at this slide and had this like epiphany, like that is what Sepharno's talking about. That if Adam and Chava sinned and they were kicked out of Gan Eden and Adam collapsed outside of Gan Eden, Adam was depressed. He was clinically depressed. I mean, with good right. He completely changed and ruined the entire history of the world, but okay, you know? So Adam, and he couldn't function. He couldn't function after that. And he's lying there, not being able to function, completely depressed and wallowing in his self-pity, and not even self-pity, it's depression of what he has done and can't get past it. And it was at this moment, maybe, that he looked at his wife, Chava, Haisha, and he realized, I can't get past this, but maybe she can. She, the one with the Bina Yetera, with this intuition, this ability to move beyond what was right in front of me and not get sucked in. She has this broader vision. She has this intuition. Maybe she is the one. Shetzricha lechiot ulegadel habanim. She's going to have to live and raise her children. And the key word is bechet'a, in her sin, knowing what she did. She's not having a lobotomy and like forgetting everything that happened. She knows what she did. And she's going to have to live and raise her children because, as we know, that's the future. And not get sucked in and look to the future and look at the broader picture and be selfless about it, even though you feel like just getting into bed and pulling the covers over there and staying for, you know, eternity. But there's a mission here. There's a mission here that has to make me move forward. And maybe, maybe, maybe Adam at that moment says, I'm not sure I could do it, but she can. She can. And that's why he calls her Chava at this moment. I'll end there. Have a wonderful rest of the day. Thank you for learning together. Thank you for coming and joining us. And, you know, it's nice to be back in person.